Hey everyone, this podcast is part of Story Mode, the podcast network of Gamefully Unemployed. You can support us and gain access to other great exclusive podcasts at patreon.com/gamefullyunemployed. That's patreon.com/GAMEFULLY unemployed, which is spelled like it sounds.
Hi everybody.
Hello everyone.
My name is David Bell.
I am Tom Ryman.
And we just watched Blind Fury. This is the most iconic Rutger Hauer film, right?
Nick Parker is quick as a snake. Strong as a bull. Not to mention blind as a bat.
Nice doggy.
What's your problem? You blind?
Yeah.
Holy shit.
Yeah, it's easily. I mean, this is the role Rutger Hauer was most remembered for. Like when he passed, rest in power. Recently, all of the memorial tweets and tribute tweets and things on social media, they were all Blind Fury related. Heavy Blind Fury gifs and images and farewell memes. For this iconic role of Rutger Hauer's.
This is a Patreon mandated episode. This is brought to you by Josh Messenger, who actually he did choose this movie to honor the late Rutger Hauer. And I think he did a great job at that. He was originally, there's another movie he's requested of us that we'll do down the line. But he moved things around to get that, you know, Blind Fury out.
Yeah, you got to adjust your schedule.
Yeah. Tom, you've watched this movie a bunch as a kid, you said.
I definitely watched it at least a handful of times when I was a kid. But I haven't seen it in like 20 years.
Okay, this is the first time I've ever watched it. Objectively,
what a treat for you.
Yeah. I don't want to go out of control here, but objectively this is like, was this like in the top five best movies ever made? Top three best movies ever made?
Probably. I think it's like Shawshank Redemption, The Godfather, and then Blind Fury.
Okay. Because I enjoyed every minute of this movie. This movie was magical. Tom, I want you to guess what the writer has done.
I don't know.
Okay. I'll just tell you. Jim Cotta. This is the writer of Jim Cotta.
It's the writer of Jim Cotta?
Uh-huh.
Oh, of course it is.
Of course it is.
Of course it's the writer of Jim Cotta.
It's the director of The Giver. Salt. Let's see. What else here? I'm going through. Because there's The Bone Collector. Get ready for it. The Saint.
These are all classics.
Yep. Clear and Present Danger. Patriot Games.
Patriot Games is an excellent movie.
Yeah, and Blind Fury.
Blind Fury.
Holy shit.
What a career.
What a career. He also did, I guess they did a new Roots miniseries.
They did, yes, very
he
recently.
He did the first episode of that. They got the Blind Fury guy.
They saw Blind Fury and they were like, you know what, this guy has the cultural sensitivity.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. If there's anything, that this movie has, it's sensitivity.
It's the most, honestly.
So, for people who haven't seen this movie, first of all, I don't know if this is a kid's movie, because it's not, but I'm not, it feels like it's just for me.
It's not, but it sort of is.
Yes, because it has a kid in it, and it has this cutesy kids movie type dynamic in it. This is about who was injured in Vietnam, a veteran who
is
blinded
in Vietnam, yeah,
and then taken in by a village who, for some reason, maybe just because they thought it would be funny, they teach him to be a ninja.
It seems clear they're doing it because they think it's funny,
right? At first, when they're training him, they keep laughing at him for not being able to do it. So they train him to be like a sword master.
Mm-hmm.
And then we cut to, I think, 20 years later?
20 years later, when he's just walking the earth.
Yeah, he's just walking the earth and...
like Kane.
Getting into scraps. And he gets involved with an old Vietnam buddy and his kid, who is a bunch of bad guys, drug dealers. They want him dead, or they want to kidnap him.
Well, they're press ganging his Vietnam buddy, who is played by Terry O'Quinn.
Yes.
Right. To cook up meth for them, basically. He's got a meth lab in the middle of their casino in Reno.
Yeah.
And they go to kidnap his son to like force him to finish making the meth, even though it seems like he's doing it anyway.
Right. Yes. It's the flimsiest excuse for this
it's
plot.
All, I mean, his injury and training take place during the opening credit sequence, and there's no dialogue.
There doesn't need to be.
It's never explained why this village takes him in, why they train him to be a cool swordsman,
right.
How he gets back to the United States, because we find out he's been listed as KIA by the military. His name is on the Vietnam Memorial Wall. How he got back to the U.S. and how he's been living for the past 20 years, and he's just now going to see his buddy.
Yeah, from the looks of it, he's not living well. Because he's kind of a hobo.
No, he looks pretty homeless.
Yeah, the first scene is him walking into a bar, and just the movie sets the tone of the kind of thugs we'll be experiencing right away.
Yeah.
Where these guys play keep away with a woman's purse. Oh, well, first this guy's like, hey, you want... He goes to a Mexican restaurant or a bar and orders a burrito. Mm-hmm. And the thug next to him was like, you want some sauce for your burrito?
Right. They start fucking with him for absolutely no reason.
Yes. And several people do, including some of the characters we're supposed to like the little kid.
Oh, who's little immediately kid's a piece of shit.
Yeah, he's immediately an asshole.
Little kid is a piece of shit. I hate that kid.
Yeah, he gives him a rock and tells him it's candy. And there's some weird... It's already... Because the premise, he's basically Daredevil.
He's Stick, essentially.
He's Stick. In that his other senses are heightened, except for his ability to know when he's about to eat garbage, because
he shoves it into his mouth
every time he falls for it. The guy puts extra hot sauce in his burrito instead of the sauce he asked for. I don't know why you would ever let a stranger put anything on your meal that isn't like a waiter, because it's just the guy
he's
sitting next to. Yeah. So then they give him the extra hot sauce, and he hates it, but he tries to roll with it.
Mm-hmm.
And then they play keep away with a woman's purse for no reason.
Beats the Christ out of all of them.
Yeah, it's the most henchman-y thug thing to ever
do. They're just henchmen for no reason. They're just these guys hanging out in a bar in Miami.
Yeah.
Just getting drunk on a weekday.
This is when I thought it was still a kids' movie. Because he doesn't, like, he fucks them up, but it's pretty cartoonish from what I remember.
Right, like, he does it like he's doing it on accident. Like, he, like, kind of pretends to slip and turn wildly, and he just knocks the shit out of them with his cane.
Right, but then he goes to visit Billy, who, again, immediately sucks. He, like, flips him off in his face, and he's looking for Billy's dad,
Terry O'Quinn,
and he meets Billy's mom,
Meg Foster from They Live.
Is that who that is?
Yeah, it's the lady from They Live.
Wow, because it doesn't go well.
No, she gets shotgunned by the biker of the apocalypse.
That surprised the hell out of me.
Yeah, she gets assassinated like immediately.
She gets assassinated in front of her kid, who's like knocked out at the time. And then Rutger Howard, because the bad guys come with like fake cops or corrupt cops.
Right. The main henchman is a guy named Slag, who is played by the biker of the apocalypse, Randall Tex Cobb from Raising Arizona.
Yes.
And he shows up with two cops who are like, that wasn't part of the deal, man. And he's like, shut up. And then grabs this kid.
Right. And shotguns the mom. And so Rutger Howard proceeds to start slicing them up. And this is the first moment I was like, oh, this isn't a kid's movie. Because he cuts off the man's hand.
Yep.
And it's just Rutger Howard murdering cops with a sword.
Oh, yeah. Yep.
And then he just takes the kid. Yep. Because the mom in her dying breath is like, you have to bring him to his father. And he basically kidnaps this child who just sort of rolls with it.
Well, the kid doesn't know his mom is dead for a little, like, Rutger Howard doesn't tell him this for
kid.
A while.
Yeah, the kid's like, where's my mom? And he's like, your mom couldn't come.
She's meeting us later.
Also,
your mom's grounded.
The final henchman, what's his name?
Slag by Slag. For the Apocalypse.
Slag leaves the scene by jumping out of a window.
He sure does. Well, because, like, Rutger Hauer so thoroughly fucks him up.
Right. Not that, like, an open window, I should add.
No. By the end of the scene, like, he's scared to move because he's just going to get slashed up again. And then he says something like, yeah, it's a real fancy butter knife, but it won't stop a bullet. And then he jumps through the front room window.
Right.
Just completely through it.
And now... And then so he takes the kid who doesn't ever suspect he's being kidnapped, which I think is funny, because all the kid knows is that this weird stranger showed up, like grabbed him, because the kid flips him off and he grabs his hand aggressively. And then some dudes show up. He gets knocked out. Next thing he knows, he's getting dragged on a bus by this guy who's just like, you can't talk to your mother. You can't talk to your mother. We got to go. And the kid is never like, gee, I wonder if I'm being kidnapped right now.
No, he's a dumb kid.
He is a very dumb kid. So it's like they got a real midnight run situation on their hands.
Yeah, yeah.
He's dragging this kid across country to go to his dad.
The kid's a real piece of shit.
Yeah, and the kid's a real piece of shit.
So he's taking this kid to Reno. At one of the bus stops, he finally tells the kid that his mom is dead.
Yes.
He breaks down with the boo-hoos and runs off into this cornfield.
Yeah,
and the bad guys are just there waiting for him.
He runs into a cornfield, which, as you do. And the camera, like, pans over to a truck full of henchmen. And I was like, who are these men? Are they unrelated? Because they are. They seem like they're henchmen for hire. They seem like locals.
Yeah. You want to hire local when you're, you know.
Right.
That's how you keep the economy alive. That's how you spread jobs out, man.
Right.
You got to hench local.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Absolutely. Mm-hmm. They know the area. They know the area, too.
Exactly. You know, they're invaluable.
Yeah.
It's like the henchman's union.
Yeah, exactly. They saw that kid cry and they're like, oh, I know where you cry around here. You cry in the cornfield. That's where you got to cry.
That's where all the tears go.
Yep.
Tears go in the cornfield.
It's true.
Guys, this movie is the fucking greatest.
It's so good. I'm about to get... All right. So I have an overall observation. Pointed out by this character. This movie has some of the best henchmen ever.
They're great.
And in general, some of the best, like, background extras and features extras. Because this scene includes, I think, the single best character ever, which is the hillbilly henchman eating popcorn in the cornfield.
Yep.
Just sitting there scarfing down popcorn in a bag for some reason.
Demolishing that popcorn.
It got better because I looked up the actor who played him. Mm-hmm. His name is Weasel Forshaw. And it's like, this is maybe the greatest person who ever lived.
Glorious human, you.
Yeah. And then not soon after, we meet Lyle and Tector.
Lyle and Tector.
They must have saw Popcorn Guy and they're like, oh, we can do better.
We gotta one-up this shit. they're two brothers. henchmen.
They have
got
a whole
into the
arc.
Trade. They do have an entire arc.
They could be their whole another movie is Lyle and Tector.
There could be a movie just about Lyle and Tector.
Yeah, like a Hobbs and Shaw situation. Lyle and Tector. Why is he named Tector?
I don't know, but he is. They're like two kids who got cowboy hats for Christmas one year and just stopped growing.
Yes, and
they just stopped developing emotionally.
They're so fucking weird. They ambush Rutger Hauer. He goes to the father's house, and like the girlfriend of the father is there.
Yes,
and they come in and they point a gun at his head and they kidnap him. And the girlfriend doesn't seem like very happy about this, but she's clearly been coerced. And they put him in the back of a van.
We're glossing over the part where he carves through about a dozen guys in that cornfield.
Oh yeah, that should
including
be
including the hero eating the popcorn.
Yes, he stabs him. He also does. He like steps out between two guys and like taps his sword and just goes like shoot, and they turn around and shoot each other.
It's the one guy that turns around shoots the other guy, and the guy that shoots the other guy is Popcorn Man.
Right.
And then he gets and then he gets spooked and just runs through the cornfield, and Rutger Hauer just stands in front of him with his sword out.
Right. And at this point,
Weasel stabs himself.
Right. Yes. This is true.
Mm, what a hero.
Oh, the Weasel. Yeah, and it's like a horror movie sequence. A lot of the times he kills henchmen, they're terrified. And they don't know where he is.
They're like sweating and trembling. Like at the end of this scene, Slag grabs the kid and throws him in this shed. And then he's sitting on top of the shed blasting his shotgun into the cornfield.
Yes.
And Rutger Hauer shows up and cuts the house down.
Yes.
With the kid inside.
Yeah. Doesn't matter.
And then he slashes Slag the fuck up and grabs the kid and runs off. And then they reveal that Slag was wearing a vest, so he's still alive.
Right. There's also the way Rutger Hauer...
I wanted to make sure we addressed all that.
Oh, no, that's good to address, because it's also... The way Rutger Hauer plays the being blind is he basically expressionless.
Yes.
So he's like his role in Blade Runner, kind of. Like, he's scary. He's got this, like, no expression as he's murdering these men.
Well, it's actually pretty good. Because it's not that he doesn't have an expression, it's that his expression never reaches his eyes.
Yes. Oh, no, yeah, and he's doing a great job with it.
Because he, like, smiles and stuff, but his, like the top half of his face, like, never moves.
Right. I mean, he's a great actor.
Right, and, he was pretty good, yeah. So
it's crazy to see, like, an amazing actor in a movie like this.
In one of the greatest movies of all time. I don't think it's weird
point.
At all.
Yeah, like, that's
it's,
a good it's, point.
But of course he's in this movie.
Yeah. So going back to Lyle and Tector.
Mm-hmm.
So they got him in the back of the van, and they're very loud in the back of the van, by the way, when they're escaping. No
right,
one's
they're making all kinds of noise. Like, the kid, like, starts screaming, "I did it!" when he gets free. And, like, Lyle and Tector are just, like, in their own universe in the front seat.
Well, it's the first tell that, like, these guys, whoever played Lyle and Tector, I don't know, again, I don't know if they crafted, like, they had, like, a weekend where they got to, like, create these characters, and they just kind of it got away from them, but he cuts himself on the sword cane. I don't know which one, Lyle or Tector.
Lyle. I want to put Lyle is played by Nick Cassavetes.
Yes.
Who is the son of John Cassavetes.
Yes, because this movie is just out of control.
This movie is a prestige drama.
Yes. and he cuts his finger, and then to the girlfriend, he holds it up and goes, "Lick my wound." And she doesn't want to. He's like, "Come on, lick my wound." And so she does. And he goes, "Oh, yeah, baby, more."
Well, she bites his thumb.
Yeah, and it's like, what the fuck are these people?
What is this? What is this man?
Yeah, they later have an exchange that I had to rewind to hear. And I guess we could get to it. But it's a part where they shoot up the ski lift.
I know exactly what you're talking about.
The line.
That has more holes in my dad's rubber. Dad wore rubber?
Yeah, I didn't know daddy wore a rubber set under his
rib. I didn't know daddy wore rubber.
What the fuck is that line?
I don't know. We meet Lyle and Tector as each one of them is holding one of Terry O'Quinn's legs, and they're dangling him over the side
of a
building.
That's true.
That's how we're introduced to these characters.
They have so many layers to it. The part in the van. They get, all right, so Rutger Hauer, they start a fire in the back. They kick him out of the van. They get stranded on the side of the road, and they carjack an old lady who then, in true, like, 90s fashion, takes out a gun and shoots at them.
A gigantic
gun. Yes, like a Joker gun.
Yeah.
Yeah. And one of them says to the other, "That's one reason I always vote for gun control."
It's Tector. The scene abruptly ends. So he's like, "That's why I always vote for gun control." And then it just cuts.
Oh my god! And then what
These
happens?
Fucking
is
that, guys.
Yes, they're amazing. And they proceed to get into a car chase in Reno with Rutger Hauer, the blind man, driving while the kid tells him where to go.
10,000% driving the wrong way down a one-way street in Reno.
It was about this time that I was wondering, like, what do the cops have to say about any of this? Do they have an opinion? Because we never see them.
They never show up. No, the only two cops we see are those two crooked cops in the beginning.
Yeah, that's about it.
And they get demolished.
Yep. Yeah, so they have a crazy car chase in Reno, and it's delightful. And then they bring the kid to their bus friend.
Right, they stash the kid in a bus with this lady.
Yes, and that's what I noticed. One thing is that this movie had a lot of like nice little one-ers in it. The bus scene is all one shot. They start on the kid in the bus. They follow them slowly out of the bus. And then they pan over and they're talking at their car for a while. And it was like, oh, shit, that's a nice little one-er. And then later at the casino, they do the same thing. And I hadn't noticed it until this point. I assume because the movie was so awesome that there was so many other things
to
focus on.
There's so much to pay attention to, man. How can you be focusing on the craft of the film when it's just blowing you away with its storytelling?
This is also where their relationship gets pretty intense, him and the boy. Because I realize they're having like a scene where they're like talking to each other inches away from each other's face. And it made me very uncomfortable.
Oh, yeah. Oh, like when he's touching the kid's face while they're at the campfire and he's like, you got a good strong jaw.
Yeah. And it's like, what the fuck is happening? This kid, spoilers, this kid is more torn up about his relationship with Rutger Hauer than losing his mother.
Right. Than his mom getting shotgunned in their den.
Yeah. Spoilers. It's his mother is never really mentioned again.
Nope.
Like, she's out of the picture. New family.
Right. It's like she got shotgunned out of this timeline.
Yes, exactly.
Like, she never existed.
So they go to the casino.
Yeah. Well, Rutger Hauer does. The girlfriend doesn't go with him.
Right.
We actually don't. I don't think we see her again until the end. No, wait. She gets grabbed by Shelley Marco.
She gets kidnapped. Yeah.
She gets grabbed by the bad guy from The Last Boy Scout.
Yes. Oh man, what a great bad guy.
He is such a good bad guy.
He's so good at it. Playing like a rich prick. Like, oh, yeah. It's perfect. This is where we meet another amazing henchman, which is the pink tie mullet henchman.
Oh, yeah, the two doormen?
Yeah, and one of them, they've got these little pink ties and these big old mullets. They're beautiful.
Enormous.
Man.
They're these two roadblock gentlemen.
Yeah, I want to sculpt them. Like, I want statues of them.
Oh, and then eyebrows guy.
Oh, yeah. Eyebrows guy?
Yeah, there's like three huge dudes on the payroll at the evil casino.
Yeah.
You got these two brick shithouses who are guarding the door, and then eyebrows man, who's like Shelley Marcombe's second in command next to Slag, I guess.
Yeah.
And he's like, he guards Terry O'Quinn, and he has these crazy eyebrows.
Man, they picked such all the right people.
Watching this movie made me think of when we were talking about the new Tomb Raider last year, about how they I miss when action movies made the henchmen like colorful individual characters,
and they just gave everybody a story. Yeah,
right. Well, they made each henchman like in Die Hard, like, you know each henchman.
Yeah, that's why the Shane Black Predator was kind of refreshing, because Shane Black is very good at still doing that. And I would argue that it's also just side characters in general, because the next scene is him doing the casino, the gambling.
Oh, yeah.
And he uses his heightened senses to tell that the guy dealing the roulette is cheating with a special electronic signal magnetizes the ball or whatever.
Yeah.
So he uses his sword in the casino.
He chops the roulette table in half and flips the wheel up in his hand and is like, he's cheating. And everybody in the casino loses their minds.
All right. What happens is a woman grabs the piece of roulette wheel and holds it up above her head and screams, look at this! And everybody starts screaming, look at this! Look at this! And they just
people are running
the
in
place.
From outside the casino.
Yes. And it's a weird commentary on our world that, like, society is held together by a thread.
A very thin thread.
Yeah, because
like
the moment...
Like a thin strand of spider silk.
Right, because I don't think all the people who are rioting in that casino even know what's happening.
No, they're just... Well, we get a great moment, like, in the middle of the riot. The whole reason Rutger Hauer is doing this is so he can distract the two shithouses away from the elevator so he can get up to the penthouse where the kid is. In the middle of this like huge riot that's exploding on the casino floor, Lyle and Tector walk in
Violent Tech Dave.
They don't know what's happening. They just see that there's a riot, and they both look at each other and just grin just delightedly and just start punching random people.
Because they're the best.
Right.
They also... So he sneaks in the elevator, and he goes up, disguises as a waiter.
Right. He knocks the old waiter out and stuffs him in the cart.
Yeah, presumably kills him.
I guess, man.
Yeah. He sneaks out, and then he stops the other elevator with Lyle and
Lyle and Tector.
Tector. Jesus.
Tector. Tector. Do not forget.
I won't.
That name.
And this had where we went to a new level, because again, like,
this moment I have never forgotten. Like, this when I heard that we were going to be watching Blind Fury, I immediately thought of this moment.
Really? Because this shocked me, because it was like, okay, this is still kind of a kid's movie, but they get stranded in the elevator, and the line, I don't know if it's Tector or Lyle who delivers it, is shit fuck.
It's both of them.
Yeah, okay.
Lyle says shit, Tector says fuck, and then both in say unison, shit, they say shit fuck.
And then they throw another F-bomb later, like in the next scene. Mm-hmm. And I didn't remember any fucks until this moment. It was like someone turned on a switch, and it was like, okay, so this is definitely not for kids.
No, this is R-rated.
Right, but I spent most of the film trying to figure it out. Because it was like, it feels very, the violence was like, there's like chopping off limbs, but it's very PG-13-ish.
You only see one hand get chopped off, and the rest of the time he's slashing people up, you don't really see any blood.
Yeah, it's like someone drew on them with a red marker at the best. Yeah. And so it was like, okay, this feels like it's trying to be for kids, and then they just throw out shit fuck, and I was like, okay, so this is just for me. It's for me at that point, because I don't
know. Well, it's for everyone.
Yeah. But it's like, for me, it was like if it was like that scene in American Beauty, like I would be the only one in the audience. And it would just be me in the movie. But yeah, it's for everyone. And then they find the dad. They light everything on fire.
Yeah, he blows up his meth lab.
Yes. As you do. And then things move to the mountains.
Right, because he escapes with Terry O'Quinn. They get back to the bus, but oh no, bus lady is dead and the kid is gone. And they call Shelley Marcombe, calls him on the phone and is like, you need to come to my winter fortress. So he comes up. He has like a ski resort called Winter Haven.
Yeah.
And it's just a snow fortress.
So much lore. So much lore.
There's a lot of lore. It's just a snow fortress.
Again, more of my favorite characters. This is another moment that took it to the next level. So he's got the kid tied up and the girlfriend tied up.
Mm-hmm.
And he's in there and he's like, you got to bring the meth or I'll kill these people. And he gets off the phone and then he just turns to the buyers and he's like, so the meth's coming.
Meth's on the way.
And the buyers and are just like,
they're not having it.
No, but they're kind of having it. Like,
yeah, a little bit.
Because like at this point, imagine going to buy a car from somebody and they instead show up with a kidnapped child and they're like, yeah, it's coming. We just had to kidnap this child to get it. Like they're still stick around and they should be like, yeah, we don't want any of this. Like we're going to leave. And they eventually do, but only when it starts turning sour. Like they're just like, yeah, sometimes you gotta kidnap and kill a kid. We get it, you know?
Right.
We're 90s villains.
Showing up to buy a car and the guys there's like, you bring that car here, I'll blow this kid's head off. So yeah, the car should be here soon.
Yeah. It's incredible. It's just like such a weird new addition to this, like a whole other layer is that, and here are the buyers.
Yeah.
And they got the best mullets and
there's so many awesome mullets
the
in
80s jackets. Oh,
there is strong mullet game in this film all around.
Yes. I think we're getting to the arc for Tector and Lyle.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. The completion of Tector and Lyle's arc.
Guys, this is like Shakespeare.
Mm-hmm.
So what happens? They attack Rutger. They do the ski lift thing. Rutger Hauer fights them in a hallway, and one of them accidentally, very clearly accidentally, shoots the other.
Well, what happens is,
okay,
is you know, they show up in the ski lift, and the henchmen, all the henchmen now, we see it's just like
it's
an all star rogues gallery.
15 henchmen. Yeah,
it's everybody. It's Lyle and Tector. It's Slag. It's the two shit houses from the casino, and it's Eyebrows guy, all in a line, lighting up the gondola. And that's when we get the I didn't know Dad wore rubbers, you know.
Yeah.
Line, and they peek in there and see that they've snuck out through the floor.
So I'm sorry, real quick.
Yeah.
Did they talk to their dad about wearing rubbers?
They must have.
Okay. And
I get the feeling that Lyle and Tector's dad told them a lot about the world.
Yeah, because depending on how you look at it, their dad was either a big failure or a big success as a father.
Right.
Yeah. Not anything in between. He went for it and he got it. Like, he was clearly aiming for something with these kids. But yeah, I don't know. I can't figure out why those lines exist in this movie. They're an enigma.
So
go on, go on.
They're
sorry.
In the shootout in the hallway. Terry O'Quinn escapes. Lyle and Tector are trying to close in on Rutger Hauer, and then Rutger Hauer gets the jump on Lyle and has his sword in his mouth. He puts his sword in his mouth and just holds it in front of him.
Oh, my God. And it's like, tell me where the kid Joker. Is. Yeah.
Yeah. And then Lyle just starts shouting at Tector. He's like, just shoot him, just shoot him. And Rutger Hauer's like kind of moving all over the place. So Tector tries to shoot him and shoots Lyle in the chest instead. And Lyle gets pissed. And Tector's like, now come on, Brother Lyle, you know it was an accident. And Lyle shoots him in the face, and then they both die.
Brother against brother, this tragic, tragic ending of Tector and Lyle. Again, it's like Shakespeare.
They had such a good time together. They so enjoyed each other's company.
And they look so betrayed by each other. And
they
again,
do.
It's like the message of this movie is how quickly things fall apart.
Mm-hmm.
For
it's like
society.
Othello.
Yeah,
and he turns them against each other.
He does. He turns them against each other in this like 5 second sequence.
Yep. Lyle and Tector.
What a powerful, powerful pair. The story of Lyle and Tector.
The ballad.
Yes, the ballad of Lyle and Tector. Oh, I salute you.
Oh my gosh, you guys.
What a film. Next he cuts a guy's dick open.
He sure does. Eyebrow man.
Are they in a dance studio? They confront him.
Yeah, they're in like a
in a dance club, and they shut off the power, and what's his name? Old Losty. That's
Terry
his name
O'Quinn.
In Lost, right?
Terry O'Quinn. He's throwing Locke.
Old Lost.
Old John Lost. Old Man Lost.
Old Man Lost. He throws bombs at them.
He's throwing like flashbangs.
Yeah, while Rutger Hauer just goes fucking to town on them.
He carves through all of them.
And it's again like a horror movie. There's a shot that's like right out of Alien where one of them's just like, I don't see him. And then slowly from behind his shoulder, like pops Rutger Howard's sword and face. And it's just like, oh God. Oh, he's behind
right
you.
There. You poor man.
Yeah. And then he ends up, he stabs the guy in the dick and then moves the sword like up.
He chops him up. He guts him from the dick up, man.
Yeah.
It's Eyebrows, man. Eyebrows guy.
Yeah. It's frightening.
Rest in power, Eyebrows guy.
Yeah.
He says something like, they're like, man, like somebody says something about it being like totally dark. And he says, this is where I live. And then he cuts them all apart. It's like bone chilling.
It really is. The this is where I live line. Oh, my God.
And then he cuts a man's dick in half. Just slices it up the middle.
He really does.
Man.
This is
what a film, you guys.
It's so good. I feel like, did he have other crazy... I'm trying to remember if there was any other crazy lines he said that I loved. I think this is where I lived is the craziest.
Yeah, he says something at the very end when he's fighting Slag, and he says, unreasonable people make the world so difficult, or something like that.
Oh, yeah. So then we get to the final part, where they bring in a mini boss and a hot tub.
This is so out of nowhere.
It's so out of nowhere. It's basically
like he comes in to fight Shelley Marcombe, and he's holding the kid and the girlfriend at shotgun point, and he makes Terry O'Quinn give him the meth, and he's like, "There's somebody I'd like you to meet." And this Japanese swordsman shows up. Haven't seen him before. Never been referenced up until this point.
And at least Rutger Howard learns he's Japanese by smushing his face with his palm.
Yeah, by grabbing his face.
And then going, "Oh, Japanese." Which, all right. I mean, there's no other way for him to know, so.
Right.
But it's like a weird, it's like he palms his face. Yeah,
did they use a service to get this guy? Like, where?
They must have, right? He was just like, "I need a ninja." Because again, this is the
fucking ninja.
This is the 80s. It's just like, wait, I need a goddamn ninja henchman. We got those, right?
Yeah. That's kind of specialty henching. You can't really hench local for that.
No, you can't. But he knew he needed it. It doesn't work out.
Doesn't work because the guy starts swinging from the ceiling for some reason.
he makes a misjudgment.
Miscalculation.
He decides. See, the hot tub gets electrified in the shenanigans.
Right, because for some reason it has a sun lamp right above it, and it immediately gets chopped in half by a sword, sword.
When you like to go in the hot tub, you also like to have a sun lamp blasting at you.
Blasting electric heat into my face.
Yeah, you know how people love
sitting in boiling water.
You know how people love like going in hot tubs in the middle of the summer in the desert? You just just get in that hot tub. And just let God take you.
Soak up them rays.
Become one with the sun. So the heat lamp falls in the goddamn hot tub, and then they're fighting around it, and it was like, oh, this is cool. Because it's like high stakes. It's like the end of episode 3 where they're fighting over lava, but it's a single hot tub.
Right. It's a single hot tub, and they could easily move out of this room.
Yes, they could, and they should. They should be like, look, someone's going to get really hurt. We should probably.
Right. I mean, we're swinging swords around, but let's be careful about that hot tub.
Yeah.
Someone might fall in.
Yeah. So, and he's swinging around, and he cuts the rope, and he falls in, and that's that for ninja.
That's it for the swordsman.
And then final henchman shows up.
Slag, the biker of the apocalypse.
And he gets Darth Mauled.
He sure does.
They have a brief fight that's pretty intense.
Yeah, because he shows up immediately and shoots Rutger Hauer.
Right, and it's all about not getting him to the gun, basically.
Yeah, he throws his sword into Slag, but Slag pulls it out and throws it, and it lands on the ground.
The kid throws it.
It's like, "Uncle Nick, catch!" And he throws it. It lands in the fucking hot tub because that kid is useless.
Yeah, he sure does. And so he grabs the other ninja's sword.
Right, he grabs a fucking katana, and you're like, "Oh, it's on now."
And he slices at him, and then the henchman goes, "Ah!" and smashes out of the window. And it turns out this ski resort is next to, I don't know, a 1,000-foot cliff.
Right, it's just a mountain. This is a full-on snow fortress. Just a snow fortress on the side of a mountain.
In the final moments of this movie, they introduce this giant Indiana Jones matte painting cliff.
This chasm that is above. And Slag falls into it and flies in half as he's falling.
Darth Maul, like, George Lucas clearly saw this film.
He sure did.
And was like,
he was
That's
like,
what
how
I
do
want.
I cut a guy in half in a PG movie?
Because he's spinning, and then the two pieces separate as he's spinning out.
Yeah.
And it's beautiful.
It really is. It's so glorious.
And then
he falls for 5,000 feet.
Yeah. That's sort of the like, we never see what happens to the final bad guy.
Right.
We?
Like, it's just, it ends. Like, it cuts immediately from that to them getting on a bus. Like, well, I guess that's all over with.
Just going to San Francisco. Like,
going to San Francisco.
That was a day.
Like, what happened to the bad guy?
Yeah. No, they never show him getting hauled off by the cops.
No,
it's
they
like
don't
they forgot
it.
To film the scene or something.
Yeah. It's very strange.
It is very strange. I'm imagining I'm picturing the kid crying with the sword over the main bad guy while Rutger Howard's like, come on, kid, do it. Don't be a wuss. This is for your father. Take his head, kid. Take his head now. And the kid's just crying. That's what I wanted. But, really, you can fill in anything you want. That's the beauty of it.
Right.
And they get on the bus, and the kid's, like, so sad that because Rutger Howard, at the last minute,
decides not to go with them.
Yeah. And then the kid runs after him, screaming, I need you. Come back. Again, his mom died, who he's known for a lot longer. He gets one cornfield cry for that.
Yeah, and a weird campfire tale.
Yeah, So he's all over Rutger Hauer. Then he like says, "I hate you" or something, because Rutger Hauer like vanishes.
Yeah,
and then he throws his little sculpture off the bridge, and Rutger Hauer catches it, and he puts on his glasses, and he walks off into the sunset to fight another day, to find another child to kidnap.
Find another child's life to abduct his way into.
Yeah, until Blind Fury 2, which should have happened.
It really should have.
This movie's incredible.
It's the greatest film ever made.
Yeah, I think it's number one.
Yeah, it's edged out those other two bullshit films we mentioned, and it's just this one. This is the pinnacle of human achievement and storytelling.
Yeah, this should be on the golden record, right?
Yeah.
This is what we send into space.
This should be only thing on the Voyager.
Yeah, only thing.
Just Blind Fury.
Yeah. Yeah, I want the aliens to see this and only this. I don't want that other stuff getting in the way.
Mm-mm. None of that crap.
Yeah.
Ugh. So if you can't tell, you should absolutely rent this movie.
Yeah, it's like on Amazon, it's like $4.99, $3.99. Mm-hmm. If it was $100, you should still probably
still rent it more than once.
Yeah.
Even if it was that expensive.
It is everything about like 80s, 90s action movies rolled into one.
Yeah.
It's. I think what's important to note here is that I know when they were making it, they must have known it was funny.
Yeah. It was sold as an action comedy.
Yes. But it's that fun level where it's like you can't tell what they knew was funny and what they didn't.
Right.
Like little pink bow tie mullets is like, I don't know if they thought that was funny.
But that guy's hilarious.
Yeah. Like the weird suck my wound stuff, like even the stuff that I know is supposed to be funny is so oddly funny. Like the dad's rubbers line, where it's like, I know they knew that was a joke, but what a weird joke.
Right. This is such a uniquely strange film.
Yes. Because the way it's funny is ways that's, there's no punchlines. It's just weird.
Yeah.
Like they're just like throwing stuff out there. Like, this is a funny line. Hey, everybody, just fool around. Just say weird shit.
It's just madness. It's madness. It reminds me a lot of Hobo with a Shotgun that Rutger Hauer would do many years later.
Right. I haven't seen that one because I was afraid that it's too artificial.
We can talk about that at a different time, but it's very similar to this in tone.
Okay. Well, that makes me happy.
The violence is way more extreme, but it is a lot of just... There's some stuff that is deliberately funny, and then there's other stuff where it's like, I don't know if they know this is funny, but it's incredible.
That's cool. Yeah.
It's just madness. So
that makes me happy.
So I like watching this movie again. I see why he was the choice for Hobo with a Shotgun.
Oh yeah. It's like, 100%.
It's, Blind Fury is amazing.
Yeah, this is an incredible film.
It's man, what an achievement. What a singular achievement.
I know. So much had to happen. So much had to come together for this to be created.
So many stars had to align.
Yeah. Because it's down to everyone. It's the performances. Mm-hmm. It's the writing. It's the directing. Again, it's not badly directed.
No.
Which is a weird thing to say about this movie, because it's like the last thing you notice, but it's like, yeah, the cinematography and directing is kind of good in this.
Yeah, it's not bad.
And the fact that it's the writer of Gymkhana, because if you watch Gymkhana, that's another one where you're like, I really don't think they think this is funny. Like, it seems very serious.
But it is.
But it's hilarious. But they must have known what they were doing was funny.
Right. Just at a conceptual level, this is hilarious.
Right.
You guys should watch Gymkhana, too, if you haven't seen Gymkhana.
This director, it's Don Burgess. Jesus Christ. Cinematography of Forrest Gump.
Sure.
Flight. Book of Eli. I'm panning down in this because there's some classics on here. And there's also Radio and Terminator 3. Spider-Man. Castaway. Oh. What Lies okay. Beneath. Wow. Contact. Yeah. Like I said, Forrest Gump.
He fucks with Robert Zemeckis.
Yes, he really fucks with Robert Zemeckis. And yeah, fucking a Blind Fury.
Man, what a career.
Uh-huh. Recently he did, I don't know if I mentioned, Aquaman.
Oh, shit. Yeah, this guy's the best.
And The Conjuring 2. He's moved on to James Wan. Also Monster Trucks, which, you know.
Sure.
He's doing The Witches. So, yeah, like, there's some fucking hardcore talent behind this.
You guys, I don't know why you haven't already rented the film watching it.
You should be renting it right now.
I don't know why you're still listening to us.
If you were driving to work, you need to turn around.
Yeah. Pull over and start watching Blind Fury.
Uh-huh.
You monster.
Yeah. Quit your job.
Just quit your job. It's all Blind Fury from now on.
Uh-huh, that's it.
That's all you got to do, man.
Blind Fury is life.
That's your only responsibility.
So, yeah, I don't know. Thanks for listening, everybody.
Yeah.
Special
thanks to, what
Josh
was his name?
Josh Messenger. Yeah. He's a real hero right now. He goes by, I think his patron name is HP Loveshaft.
Oh, yeah. Ooh, yeah.
Yeah, so.
That's a top-tier name. If you guys are interested in getting your own special episode of We Just Watch, you can head on over to our Patreon, patreon.com/gamefullyunemployed.
Yeah, we got exclusive podcasts as well.
We sure do.
Such as Tom and Jeff Watch Batman and Fox Mulder is a Maniac. Check those out.
Both shows that we do.
Yeah, check out our TeePublic store, teepublic.com/stores/gamefullyunemployed. We have all sorts of fucking shirts. And if you have a moment, you can leave us a review on Apple Podcasts. Or not. I don't know. What's important is that you see Blind Fury, really. Yeah,
that's what's really important. We gotta see about getting a Lyle and Tector shirt into our TeePublic store.
Yeah, I mean,
I don't know why we've waited this long.
I don't know. I don't know why society hasn't waited this long to honor them.
It's, seriously.
Yeah.
What a beautiful relationship cut tragically short.
Yeah. It's, man, this movie, it's the best movie.
It has everything.
God.
Swords, Rutger Hauer.
That's everything you need. It has an alligator.
That's an alligator.